Moncrief on News Talk.
Not many goodies in the budget yesterday, and not many surprises either, including the inevitable rise in the price of cigarettes. That price, inexorably edging towards 20 euro a packet, has of course prompted an increase in cigarette smuggling and sales of knock-off brands to such an extent that cigarette manufacturers employ investigators to spy on the dodgy smoke trade. Conor Pope from the Irish Times has been meeting with some of them. Afternoon, Conor.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
How bad is the problem, or how many illegal cigarettes are people smoking in this country?
It's an absolutely massive problem. And I think an awful lot of non-smokers perhaps don't appreciate the scale of the illicit tobacco trade in this country and indeed everywhere in the world. So by conservative estimates, around one in four cigarettes that are smoked in Ireland are contraband or counterfeit cigarettes. And they are brought into the country, or they're manufactured illegally in this country or in other countries. And you or I might say, well, sure, I don't care. Like, why do I care if big tobacco is losing money? You know, because let's face it, they are hardly the paragons of virtue.
Yeah.
But I suppose from a state perspective, it's costing the Irish taxpayer, it's costing the exchequer around 600 million euro a year in lost revenue, this illicit tobacco trade. So it is a really, really big deal.
Yeah. Okay. And so the ones that are brought in, how are they smuggled into the country? I assume this isn't people just chucking a couple of packets into their suitcase kind of thing.
Well, there's multiple different ways. I mean, as you said at the outset, tobacco companies employ investigators to deal with this stuff. So I went on a big sting and stakeout operation with investigators from a company called JTI, which are they would make some of the most well-known tobacco brands in the Republic of Ireland. And they were telling me that, like, there are multiple different strands, there's multiple different avenues down which the illegal tobacco comes. So in the first instance, you might have somebody who travels to Tenerife, where there's a really big duty-free zone, or they might be traveling to Eastern Europe, and they might be buying suitcase full of cigarettes and bringing them home to Ireland and then selling them. So you might be able to buy, you know, 10,000 or like 20 packets of 20 cigarettes, bring them home and sell them at a 200 or 300% markup. So you might be able to make yourself a fair few bob doing that. So that's one avenue. Now, that would be probably the most minor are the least significant avenue. But big criminal enterprises all over the world are also smuggling in to this country and indeed to other countries, millions of tons of tobacco. So millions of tons of tobacco will be crossing the world every single year illegally. And in many respects, it's a very low risk, high reward enterprise. Because if you're bringing in illegal tobacco into the Republic of Ireland, you don't have to deal with like the dodgiest of drug kingpins in Colombia. You know, because at one moment when you buy it, the product could be perfectly legal because tobacco is a legal product. But it's only when it becomes contraband and it's only when it's circumventing the excise duty of individual countries that it becomes illegal. So the risks are comparatively low, but yet the rewards are absolutely massive. So the tobacco smuggling thing would be a big part of it. But then, of course, there's also these illegal tobacco factories that are set up in countries across the world, including in Ireland, and they can make like millions of cigarettes every single week. And that's another way that the cigarettes enter into the Irish market. So there's multiple different strands, from very, very serious criminal gangs to, as I say, somebody who might just pack, you know, 10,000 cigarettes into a suitcase when they're coming home from Tenerife and use that to pay for their holidays.
And the factories now, the cigarettes that they're producing, are they producing things that look like, I don't know, Marlboro or whatever? You know,
yeah.
Are they knock-off
yeah.
copies of the real thing?
100%. And you see, that's the thing. And funnily enough, when I was with these people from JTI, I mean, I was with what happened is we all met in a hotel in Dublin, and then we went out on our super exciting stakeout, spying on the ladies of Moore Street. But I mean, I was asking them, like, is anyone here a smoker? Like, because none of them were, as it happens. But what I really wanted to establish was, like, I am an ex-smoker. Now, I haven't smoked since November the 1st, 1999. So it's a long time ago that I smoked a cigarette, right? But when when I was a smoker, I had my favourites, and like everybody has their favourites. And I was kind of wondering, if you smoke Marlboro Lights, or if you smoke Silcutt Purple, or Benson Hedges, or Rothmans, or whatever it might be, and you're buying the knockoff version, does it taste the same?
Yeah.
Now, because they were non-smokers, they couldn't really definitively say, oh, no, well, they don't. But I mean, their supposition, and this would be based on them having conversations with people who are actually smokers, is they don't taste the same. So if you're buying the knockoff Marlboro Lights and you smoke them, you can probably tell straight away that they're not legitimate Marlboro Lights, but they look for all the world like the legitimate ones. And it's not like, they're not so different that you would be going, oh, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted in my life. So it's not like, you know, the way, I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with Ducados. They're these, when I was growing up, there was this really cheap black tobacco from Spain, and it was absolutely revolting, but it was incredibly cheap. So it's not, but you'd smoke them if you were really desperate. So the difference between the knockoff Marlboro Lights and the regular Marlboro Lights isn't probably that extreme, but you'd probably notice it, according to people who, as I say, don't smoke.
Yeah, I'm intrigued though. I said, if there's factories operating in Ireland, they must be bringing in bulk amounts of tobacco and that kind of stuff. And
you're looking, like, let me just give you a sense of it. Like this, in 2022, revenue seized more than 51 million dodgy cigarettes and around 11 tons of tobacco. Last year, revenue seized 112 million cigarettes and nearly 40 tons of tobacco. And that's just the tobacco that they've seized. So you would imagine that while revenue and the guards are really on top of this stuff, there's an awful lot more of the product that's getting through that hasn't been detected. So if they're catching 40 tons of it, there's tens and tens and tens of tons more that is coming in undetected. And you kind of might say to yourself, oh, it'd be really hard to set up a tobacco factory. Like, because I was going to say, how would you do that? But apparently, like, there was one, I think, last year or maybe earlier this year in Dublin 11. So somebody had set up an illegal tobacco factory in Dublin 11. Because all you need is a building and some of the machinery that would be used to make tobacco. And a lot of that machinery is being sold on the black market, and it's coming from totally legitimate sources, you know, decommissioned tobacco factories across Europe. And somebody might have the equipment to sell. So you buy it, you buy the equipment, you ship it into Ireland, you set it up, you make the tobacco for as long as you can, you're caught, you're busted, and you move on. And that's so it, the factories can churn out huge quantities of cigarettes, and then they're boxed up to look like a legitimate product, and then they are sold all over the country. And in terms of the prices, because, you know, as you say, a packet of 20 cigarettes is now edging close to 20 euros. I think it's about 19 euro now. They probably cost less than a euro to make. And everybody up the supply chain will take their slice of it. So you buying the knockoff cigarettes on Moore Street or Talbot Street or anywhere around the country might be paying 10 euro for a packet of 20 cigarettes. The actual price is 20, so you're getting them for half price, but none of the money that it should be going to revenue is going to revenue. And I think that's one of the big fundamental issues with it, apart from the fact that it's just a terrible, terrible habit, Sean. I'm approaching this with the evangelical zeal of an ex-smoker.
Yes.
You know, if something is being done to facilitate smoking at a lower price, well, I think that's just a bad thing from the get-go.
What is known about the supply chain? When either it arrives smuggled into the country or from a factory someplace?
Well, it's coming from all over the world, right? So that's the first thing I'd say. So the tobacco could be shipped in from Eastern Europe. It could be shipped in from India. It could be shipped in from China. The cigarettes could be made in any of those jurisdictions. Or indeed, it could be made, the tobacco products could be made in this country as well. So it is literally, and Sub-Saharan Africa is a really big place where this stuff is made too. And I think one of the real problems here is because organized crime is involved in it, an awful lot of the people who end up working in the factories are the most disadvantaged people on the planet. And they are effectively enslaved by the factory owners, because they're brought in, they're told, we'll give you a job, you can work in this factory. But if you're working in an illegal factory, it's not like you have any employee rights, it's not like you have an entitlement to sick days. So people might be brought into these factories thinking that they're going to be getting a good, decent job. And then they end up finding it incredibly difficult to break out of this criminality, because that is in its kind of nature. And because when I went into it, I was saying, part of the questions I was asking them, well, like, some people would regard it as a victimless crime. Now, I personally don't, but some people might say, sure, I'm just buying some cheap tobacco on the street. It's grand. Mm. Up and down the supply chain, there are victims of this particular crime. So it's not victimless, and it is something that, you know, the state would do well to stamp out. And I have to say, revenue and the guards are doing their best, but it is a little bit like playing whack-a-mole, because, you know, the trade is so diffuse and the number of sellers is so diffuse that it's really, really difficult to clamp down on it in any effective way. And also the market is there because people don't see it as a problem. The people who are buying the tobacco illegally don't see it as a problem. And there's no, and I use the word shame advisedly, but there's nobody thinks it's, nobody's ashamed to be buying a box of tobacco on the street. And I think maybe we're a little bit too complacent about it, because it is actually a problem.
Yeah, because I suppose, yeah. If there was a drugs factory next door, you might ring the guards. If it was a cigarette factory, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also the sellers. I mean, a lot of the people who are selling it are just, the people who are at the very end of the supply chain, the people who are selling to people like you and me, although not you and me, they're the people we'd be seeing in the shops. They're just normal people who are just trying to make a few bob. And I think so people tend to be quite forgiving of that, as they should be, because these people are not exactly extremely wealthy or anything. But I think it's the ultimate, when you climb up and up the supply chain, it becomes really problematic.
Yeah. So the people that you were going out with, they work for Big Tobacco. And so what can they do about it? Because I assume they don't have the authority to arrest anyone or anything.
No. So in essence, what happened was there was the stakeout operation. And I love using the phrase stakeout operation because it's not something I get to do every day.
Sure.
But the stakeout operation involved three distinct sales. So the people are employed by the tobacco company, and they're not full-time employed. There is one person I spoke to who is a full-time employee, and he's the global director of monitoring illegal tobacco, a former guard from Ireland called Vincent Byrne. But the other people, they're employed on a freelance basis. They will go into it. One chap, he went into a shop in the north inner city, one of those shops that's selling vapes and cheap tech and Labubus, one of these kind of knockoff type shops. And he went in and he bought a packet of Marlboro Lights, or what looked like Marlboro Lights. And I think they regularly retail for €19. He bought them for 12. So that he puts them in his pocket, and he puts them in an evidence bag, and then they will give that information to the guards. So they don't have any enforcement powers themselves. Then the same chap tried to buy some tobacco off some ladies standing on Moore Street, but they were far too wise to him, and they were like, no, sorry, we don't have anything.
So then selling cheap fags on Moore Street, it's almost like an Irish tradition at this point.
100%. And so then they sent somebody else down to try and buy the cheap fags, but again, they clocked him straight away, and they were like, yeah, we're not going to sell to him. So one of the women he approached, he said, do you have any cigarettes? And she said, no, love, not today. And I could see at her feet was a bag of tobacco, and I was kind of going, sorry, missus, you have it some there. They're in that Tesco bag there. But no, I didn't, because I was undercover, Sean. And then another sale happened when they established a connection with some guy who was selling tobacco on Facebook Marketplace, and they drove around to his house in a leafy suburb of South County Dublin, and they bought six pouches of tobacco for I think roughly around €100, when they'd normally retail for closer to €180. And that guy was completely oblivious to anything untoward happening. So he was just handing over the tobacco and taking the money and see you later. And I was kind of going, yeah, you're not really that clued in. Like, the ladies in Moore Street would have that chap for breakfast. But so that was the three different types of sale. And then what they do is they can either give all the information to the guards, and then the guardie can act on it because they will know that this person is selling an illegal product. Or if they think there's value in it, they will build up the relationship with the particular seller and hope they can move further up the supply chain.
Yeah.
So they can see where maybe the seller on the street is getting it, and where the person who sells to the person on the street is getting it. And they go up and up and up until they can try and, combat it at a higher level. But ultimately it is a game of, as I said, whack-a-mole. And, there are so many different sellers selling through so many different avenues that it is almost impossible to police. And that's why, like with the drug trade, the big thing is obviously capturing the illegal tobacco in the ports. And there's a huge amount of work being done by law enforcement on that score as well.
Yeah, because, those three examples you gave, Connor, they're not exactly the big fish.
100. No, they are the smallest of small minnows. I mean, and I think everybody would recognise that. But and I was kind of saying to the people from JTI, like, why bother? Like, you mean we all know that there's people selling tobacco on Moore Street? Like, so why do you pay somebody to tell us that there's somebody selling tobacco on Moore Street? And I think their whole point is they want to create a context in which the illegal trade is going on. So they want to be able to get a sense themselves as to what's happening at all levels of the illegal tobacco trade. And then they want to be able to present that as a in that context to law enforcement and say, well, X number of sellers were selling on the street on this particular day. So now you know. And I mean, they're not doing this because they're interested in my well-being or your well-being or your listeners' well-being. The companies will be straight up and say they're doing this to protect their brands and to protect their income. And in the same way, there's an organisation called Retailers Against Smuggling, and they're a kind of an umbrella group of Irish retail shops, and they're also fiercely against smuggling. But again, it's not because they are interested in your well-being or my well-being, or indeed even in the Exchequer's well-being. They're interested in protecting their own margins, and that is entirely their right. I mean, these people have shops, they're selling illegal products. And I did, by the way, put it to the tobacco companies that, you know, the tobacco company, like, why should we care about what you guys are up to? Like, why, like, what, we're not on your side. The product, whether it's contraband or not contraband or illegal or not illegal, it's still going to give people cancer, emphysema, heart disease, strokes, all of the rest of it. Whether it's legal or not, and their perspective is, well, listen, we make a legal product. Everything that we do is highly regulated, and we pay a huge amount of taxes, and everything that the criminals are doing undermines that, and none of the criminals can say that they're doing anything that's in any way legal. And you can see their point on that score.
Mm. Connor, thanks a million for speaking with us today, if that's your real name, seeing that you're always undercover. That was somebody who claimed to be Connor Pope, consumer affairs correspondent for the Irish Times.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.